It's Thursday, which means it's the day we read from your letters.
Several people wrote complaining about my interview yesterday with Chicago Tribune columnist John Cass on the fire at the E2 nightclub. In the interview, Mr. Cass criticized the role played by the Reverend Jesse Jackson and his son, Jesse Jackson Jr., in the aftermath of the tragedy.
Typical of the letters we received was this from Tariq Ahmed of Costa Mesa, California. I listened as John Cass was given an unchallenged opportunity to portray the Honorable Jesse Jackson Jr. as merely a creature of his father's will, as a crony of Mayor Richard Daley, and in Cass's words, as angrier about the movie Barbershop than the deaths of 21 children.
He continues, I do not challenge that Cass should have been given the chance to speak, but the format in which he was interviewed gave the positions he stated as controverted fact. A balancing and, in Mr. Ahmed's view, factually correct perspective should have been aired as well.
Another interview that spurred quite a few emails was Robert Siegel's conversation with Elizabeth Cohen about post-war America. In it, Ms. Cohen took issue with the conventional wisdom that the GI Bill, which helped returning veterans pay for education in the aftermath of World War II, was a great success story.
Among those who wrote was Dr. Dennis Wyant of Melbourne, Florida. Dr. Wyant says he spent 25 years working for the Department of Veterans Affairs and personally witnessed tens of thousands of success stories. He writes, these veterans ranged from high school dropouts to those who were severely injured in combat. Dr. Cohen failed to mention that over 1 million disabled veterans took advantage of the GI benefits.
And Dr. Wyant goes on to say, if your listeners have doubts about the success of the GI Bill, then have them ask their uncles, friends, neighbors, or any of the other 20 million veterans who benefited.
That's advice Shelley Brisbane has already taken. She wrote to us about her father. My dad, she says, would have had to look up to see working class when he returned from the Army, earned his GED, and used the GI Bill to put himself through college. He became a teacher, then a salesman, then a manager for a regional corporation. Just an anecdote, but one that means a lot to me and my family.
Ms. Brisbane hails from Austin, Texas, and she also mentioned how much she enjoyed reporter John Burnett's ode to the beginning of spring in her hometown. Other Texans weren't so thrilled. They thought John guilty of something those of us who work in the media are rarely accused of, excessive optimism.
Max Brandenberger writes, while there may be a few signs of spring appearing, Central Texans know that late February frosts are notorious for ruining peach crops. He continues, John also failed to mention that just 9 days before his story aired, people in parts of Austin and the surrounding area awoke to a rare 1 inch of snow on the ground. I think talk of spring in mid-February is just a wee bit premature.
And other listeners accused John of libeling Old Man Winter. Chris Burrow of Fairbanks, Alaska wrote to say, today we had clear blue skies, the sun was shining, and the temperature rose to a balmy 2 degrees. After a fun day of helping a friend run her sled dogs, I arrived home and took my own pup out for a long walk. A full moon lit our path as we meandered back to the cabin. Austin can have its birds and flowers. Here in Fairbanks, we have another 2 months of winter and anxiously await every minute of it.
Whether you hail from Alaska, Texas, or any other place where all things considered is heard, we welcome your emails. Write to us at atc@npr.org. That's atc@npr.org. And please don't forget to let us know where you're writing from and how to pronounce your name.